Welcome to another edition of Lex Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Hello again, Mandy.
Hi, Alan.
Well, July is in the books, and boy, what an entire month it was.
It was. July, you know, it was hot, and it's okay that we think that it's over. I think we're ready to not be so hot in July. But, of course, we had a great month, culinary month, so many food activities happening across the county. The museum had a great month with visitors in our new 250 Lex exhibit. Which we were very excited about and will obviously be up for another year. So you still have many, many days to come visit the exhibit, as you should. We also had some great programming happen, some really nice groups come through. So if you're looking for a place to have a small meeting or to have a team building event, we would love to have you at the museum for that. It's been a good month. We're glad.
Wasn't there something with World War II?
Yes.
Okay, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so for this month's HOP, for July's HOP, we had students from the Sister Cities program that is run out of LFUCG. They spent 3 weeks in Deauville, France, which is in Normandy, where they, part of their project and their time there, they have been researching Lexingtonians who died in the Battle of Normandy and are buried in Deauville. They came then in that exchange, the French students came to Lexington with the Lexington students, and they shared that research and that timeline with Lexington during the museum's HOP on July 18th. It was great. There were a number of people that came through, really an exciting time for us. And that's a follow-up from last year's June 6th event at the Kentucky, where some of this research was first debuted.
Oh my gosh, yes, I remember that. That was one for the record books as far as that that entire observance.
Yes, it was incredible. And we should give a shout out to Fanny, who is one of the Sister Cities ambassadors from Deauville, who loves this project and does everything to make it possible. And of course, all the folks at the city who and the Sister Cities project who do great.
And talk a little bit about that the exhibit. I mean, for folks who haven't gone yet, the 250 Lex exhibit.
So Intersections, 250 Years of Lexington History, looks at 250 years of Lexington's history. It's right there in the title. But what we're doing with this exhibit is highlighting lesser known or unknown stories of Lexington's past. And we're doing this in a couple of ways. So the exhibit itself is centered by a timeline. So if you're just like, I want to know what happened in 1833, you can go straight to that timeline and know that cholera happened in 1833. But around the timeline are clusters of types of folks who have made Lexington history. And some of the names are familiar because their names are on buildings around town, like William T. Young. But lots of folks may not know that what Mr. Young did, why his name is on buildings all around town. So we have business leaders, and we'll talk a little bit about business in a minute, education, equine, medicine, sports, something for everybody to learn a little bit more about the folks who've made Lexington. It is both very serious history. We do talk about cholera and we talk about enslavement and things like that, and has some whimsy to it, because if we're going to celebrate 250 years, there needs to be a little bit of fun. So we talk a little bit about Smiley Pete, the town dog. As we all know on this podcast, I love sports. So we had a really fun sports section. And then there are a couple more clusters that are going to come in the next month or so. You can't talk about Lexington without talking about food and hospitality. So that will come. We'll do a little bit on politics. And full disclosure, listeners, I'm coming back from vacation and my brain's not fully functioning yet.
There's still sand between the toes.
There are. Yeah. There are a few, you know, there's a little bit of jet lag. So we're really excited about that and continuing to roll that out and to have folks engage with it. It's been really exciting to we talk about this every month, but somebody, every day, somebody comes in the museum and they tell us something new or they share something they had. And this Intersections exhibit is a really, really compelling way for folks to engage with parts of the city and the city's history that they don't always consider but have been there. Like the development of Rupp Arena is much more, it is the mecca of college basketball. Like, come on, guys.
Without a doubt.
But the overall development of that is a story that we can connect not only to sports, but to business development and architecture and historical preservation and all of these different parts of our city. So that this place we go to have entertainment is also this really historic site to think about how it helped shape Lexington.
All right. So when can people go see that?
Yes. You can come see us Thursdays and Fridays, 12 to 4, and Saturdays, 10 to 4. And then by appointment, we do group tours, school groups. School's coming back. It's August. School is back in session. I cannot believe it. School groups, and you can reach out to us. You can find all that information at lexhistory.org, lexhistory.org, or you can email me.
All right. Normally, we would say this is time for Lex Get Into It, but I'm changing it to Lex Get Down to Business.
Ooh, Lex Get Down to Business. Yeah, August is Business Month and the 250 celebration, and we are so excited and so lucky to have Mark Turner, who is a member of the Lexington History Museum Board and in his day job, Director of Communications for Commerce Lexington, and Bob Quick, the president of Commerce Lex. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah. We're so excited to talk about some of the business and economic development of Lexington's past. As we go in, can you tell me just, first of all, what is Commerce Lex and how did it start and what are all of these things?
Well, first of all, I would just say this. We have quite a history. Business going all the way back to the 1700s. And it's really cool, too, that we have so many records that help us to understand our past, but also our future. We're a Chamber of Commerce / Economic Development entity, and we do lots of different things, but our focus is to grow the economy, to help business, to help the community grow, and to improve the quality of place. You know, to simplify it down to those two very things, most everything fits underneath it. You know, we do networking events. We have meetings where we bring in investors and businesses to help them. Capital, everybody needs capital. And we get involved in public policy, and we travel to other communities to find out what they're doing well and not so well to help us grow our economy. So lots of different things that we'll touch on as we go through our discussion today. But I mentioned the 1700s. A lot of people think Chambers of Commerce started in the United States of America. France and Belgium were the first two back in the 1700s. Mm. But our involvement goes back to 1797. I'm going to put together some entities here. The Chamber of Commerce is not in their name, but the name has evolved. I think there's been six different names since 1797 when John Postlethwaite, mm-hmm. who was an innkeeper, called a meeting of what I call kind of that first chamber. It was called the Lexington Society for the Promotion of Immigration. Oh my goodness. Back then we were trying to find talent.
Right.
You know, and that's a huge issue today. So a lot, what Mark and I are going to share today, you're going to find is as much as things stay the same, they change. Mm-hmm. And as much as things change, they stay the same. So we've got a story to tell about how we've evolved over time. And also, as we know, Lexington was known as the Athens of the West and a city that needed workers. But it also had a basis that really we're still built around. We earned the nickname due to our strong emphasis on education, culture, and intellectual pursuits. We were one of the, if not the wealthiest city west of the Alleghenies back in that period of time. And as a early community, we helped define our country and its growth going westward.
Mm-hmm. I often say that Lexington is the first major city of the first American West and the best city of the American West.
And throw into that Transylvania University,
yes.
Because that helped us build on educating our young people, which became our workforce. So, lots of cool ties back into all of this. So chambers of commerce, modern chamber begins. The chambers we know today in Lexington began in 1881. So you're going to find maybe some different dates and times and all that. But again, it depends on if we call ourselves Chamber of Commerce or the Society, which they changed the second year because the other name was too long.
Right.
But in 1881, think of this, Lexington had 22 churches, 20 educational institutions, 8 newspapers, a public library, 5 railroad connections, 47 manufacturers, and stores of every description. Think about that. A hustling and bustling town. The Chamber Board of Directors met for the first time on November 11th, 1881, in the President's Room of the First National Bank Building. The Chamber offices formally opened in December of 1881, and the volunteer president, Avery Winston, accepted the chair role. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things evolved in that era of 1881 to 1907.
Yeah, so the Chamber of Commerce, as it was known when it first started, 1881 to 1907, obviously our first annual meeting was 1883, and that's what we call an evening with Commerce Lexington today. We also were involved in a lot of the same issues, like Bob said, that we deal with today. So we were instrumental in the building of a telephone system here in Lexington, the Water Works for Lexington, which we know as Kentucky American Water. And they're celebrating 140 years this year, which is great. We were involved in bringing the Kentucky Union Railway into Lexington. So all sorts of things like that, sanitary sewer systems, the fire alarm system that they wanted to get implemented so they could reduce insurance rates then. And then obviously business recruitment was still as important then as it is today. And they were recruiting a manufacturing company from Chattanooga called the Lexington Spoke Factory eventually when they moved here. And
spokes like bikes?
Spokes like would be bikes. I guess early cars then had spokes in their tires. So they reported when they opened that factory, they already had 140,000 sets of spokes, orders on their books for spokes and stuff. So that was pretty impressive. So, and it's a lot of the same stuff then as it was today. It's all about relationships and economic development. It's all about meeting with your elected officials, your congressional delegation. You know, you have to go out and find the sites for these businesses. So the process is probably almost the same as it was then.
You know, just no email.
And just, yeah, no email. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. And then the name was switched in 1907 to the Commercial Club, 1907 to 1914. And one of the bigger things they were involved in was endorsing a medical college at UK, what was the State University and now UK, and that was in 1909. Also helped the census get going then, and they also organized a traffic bureau in 1912. So, and then Bob will hit this part.
Well, at 1914 to 1948, we shifted to another name, the Board of Commerce. That was organized in 1914 by the consolidation of the Commercial Club and the Young Men's Business Club. In 1919, we had our first permanent office location for the Chamber on 108 North Upper Street. Again, this is just so cool that where we live today and just when I drive around and map all this out, you know, it's all
right there.
Yeah, it's all right there. We organized the reception to honor the arrival of Man of War in 1920. And so that wasn't the beginning, but it was a very pinnacle moment of our support of the equine industry. And then here's something also really neat. In 1925, Ed Wilder took over the leadership of the organization as executive secretary and would serve in that role for 40 years until 1965. I think, Mark, you told me he's the longest serving.
Yes, that's correct. Longest serving, yeah.
Director, yeah. President, of course, back then, executive secretary.
And the museum has his portrait.
Yes. Yeah, I got a snapshot of that.
Yeah.
He looked pretty sharp, too.
Yes.
He had the look.
He did. He definitely was into it.
And I think, too, we've had something like six only
That's correct.
Six executive directors, presidents.
In 100 years, yes.
In 100 years.
Six of them. So
it's, that's incredible.
It's impressive, yeah.
He's a native of Shelbyville, Kentucky, so he was a Kentuckian right up the road. Previously served as trade board secretary of the Jackson, Tennessee Chamber, so a Tennessee tie there. Instrumental in bringing IBM and the VA hospital to Lexington. Think how that changed our lives, and that individual did that and more. He was very involved in the construction of New Circle Road. He really did not want to see commerce or stores on New Circle Road. He may have been a champion to get the whole New Circle put in, but he lost on that count.
Yes, he did. he was not thrilled about the Beltline.
And but today, the first part of the road from Broadway to Richmond Road remains commercial, and it's, again, just part of our fabric. He also was integral in the discussion and the establishment of the urban service boundary. So this guy played a huge role, and his vision is amazing here. He passed away in 1980. And a fun fact, in the last 100 years, as Mark pointed out, we've had six executive directors, presidents. So that, I think, would probably go down maybe as a record anywhere.
It's incredible and speaks very much to Lexington being a place that you come and you stay, right? Yeah. To take just a brief detour about Ed Wilder, I enjoy talking about Ed Wilder very much because, as you said, he's instrumental in that, in what we think of as Lexington today, particularly with IBM. We are, full disclosure, friends, we are actually recording on July 31st, even though this podcast will come out in August. But it matters that we're recording on July 31st because today is the anniversary of the first Selectric typewriter coming off the line in Lexington.
No way.
At IBM, yes. July 31st, 1961, that first typewriter comes off the line. And apparently the Herald Leader Company purchased it. I learned that today. Oh. But I want to, if you could, maybe talk a little bit about what recruiting a business like IBM would have been like and why it mattered that it came to Lexington.
It totally changed who the community was, and I think people realized that we had a lot of eggs in one basket and we needed to diversify. I think they started out with something like 1,800 employees, and when they were at full steam, they were at 6,000. And when you bring that in, that brought in the middle class of our community. I don't think many people realized how impactful that was. And also, beyond that, it had brought in, helped bring in the VA hospital. There was just some very significant things. Dixie Cup, the manufacturing facility, and I'm probably leaving out a number of other very significant and visionary companies. Again, it goes back to this individual we're talking about, Mr. Wilder. But let me throw in one other thing here, too. The chamber played a huge role in the airport.
Yeah.
And the airport changed locations several times. Mm-hmm. And it's all the way to 1942 when the Bluegrass Airport that we know today, which now serves, 1.2 million people annually, with an economic impact of $703 million. Again, that was during that same time, as was the 1936 Keeneland Racecourse opened. Mm-hmm. So the horse industry, once again, kind of took root. But again, go all the way back on a lot of these things, and whether it be IBM, Dixie, you know, regardless, the VA hospital, the Federal Narcotic Farm, which we'll probably touch on here a little bit, all had a very significant impact during his tenure and for our community. And again, I go back to it, I probably said it three times, it'd be my third time, but the vision that he had. But a lot of people have vision and they don't know how to carry things out. He could do both.
Yes.
And we benefited. And I think he's probably a name that few people know, but quite frankly, if anything on when we have discussions like this, we do podcasts that we can keep bringing his name up for, again, his vision.
When we were offered that portrait of Mr. Wilder, this is a full, truthful disclosure. We were like, I don't know, do we need another portrait of just some guy in a chair? Like, the portrait is beautiful. We'll link it. But do we really need it? can we do anything with this story? Because we didn't know who he was either. So then we started doing some of the research, and we put his name in newspapers.com, and it was an immediate yes. We can tell so much of 20th century Lexington through this one individual's impact on bringing what we know today as Lexington into being. And of course, he didn't do it by himself. The Chamber is a huge organization, and it requires a lot of different people to buy in and do that. But to have, as you said, that vision to see Lexington as a place with an educated workforce that needed good middle class and upper class white collar work, that needed and had the ability to bring to sit at that crossroads of education and economics and beauty and quality of life, and just to do it. And it's this guy in a chair.
And you know, Mandy, I look at, if you compare then and how significant you just described the impact of kind of building the foundation mm-hmm. of which our community has built on over the years here. If you go back the period, a 10-year period of our economic development from 2015, fiscal year 2015 to 2025, and again, I go back to what he helped build a foundation for, we had $5.6 billion in new investment that came out. It could have been an existing expansion of existing company, could have been a new company coming in. A 15-year regional economic development, that number is $6.9 billion. So again, you look at what we're doing today, and I would say you can't forget your past.
Right.
You can't overlook it, because that's very, it's very much a truth point about, you know, where you can end up if you continue on working forward. And today the Chamber's 23 employees. Back then it was probably just a few, but with a lot of incredible volunteers.
So after Mr. Wilder, what happens with the Chamber?
Well, we've had a couple different folks.
Don't worry, we'll cut all that out.
Big pause.
Yeah.
Of the other individuals, again, I think because over 100 years to have just a handful mm-hmm. plus of individuals just means that I think we had the right people for the time. And that's often, you know, what you have to do is have the right people with the right skills that fit necessity. Again, I go back to Mr. Wilder, the airport. Mm-hmm. You know, the airport's been at several different locations. But think if we didn't have an airport. And I would throw out, also, Charles Lindbergh landed there in 1928. And why that's significant is I got a book here that was written by a colleague of mine called The Magicians of Main Street. Charles Lindbergh was able to do his flight and to have the notoriety that he had because the Chamber of Commerce and his community got the funding together.
Oh, interesting.
And I've got this book, and it just has story after story from 1768 to 1945 of chambers of commerce across the United States. This in itself is an interview to talk about how we helped with the Golden Gate Bridge and all these other different major pieces of infrastructure. But as we're going through today, we have our own story here. But again, one example using the airport.
Yeah. Again, thinking about that way that it all plays together. If you're going to recruit something like IBM, you need an airport because it's an international business to bring their business in and to think that way. We mentioned earlier the narcotics farm and the Veterans Hospital as pieces that Mr. Wilder also helped recruit and are still with in some versions still with us today. And Mark knows this. I enjoy talking about the narcotics farm.
But maybe a little bit too much, I think.
It's such a good story. When I'm out there watching my kids play soccer, I just think about, you know, how incredible it was out there. We'll start with the Veterans Hospital, though, for a minute. On Leestown Pike, now Leestown Road. What does recruiting something like a veterans hospital do for a community, and why would it have been something that Lexington needed or wanted to be the home to?
Well, it would have been huge back then and still is today. But, you know, when you're trying to recruit something like that, again, it's the same thing. It's relationships. You know, if you have those connections with your elected officials in Washington, D.C., you may have a good senator or a congressman that knows, you know, hey, here's a good location we can have for this particular thing. But it was much needed at that time, especially after the wars and things, you know, when that's coming up. You know, that's a huge deal for Lexington, and not only that, but the whole state.
Yes. Yeah, and the again, that educated workforce of employees that can be educated at the medical school, the chamber helped celebrate into the University of Kentucky. So fun with the narcotics farm. We're not all, you know, not Lexington is an incredible place. You mentioned the importance of relationships with federal officials. The narcotic farm is a really good example, I think, of how federal relationships can then benefit a locality.
Exactly. Exactly. There was I have a lot of old meeting minutes, and I go through a lot of the old board meeting minutes we have in our office, and there was a board meeting in 1929, December of 1929, where they talked about federal officials were arriving in Lexington in December of that year to inspect the sites proposed for a location for the federal narcotic farm. Now, that started when there was legislation passed that they wanted to identify a couple of sites for these treatment programs, and Lexington was one, and theirs opened in 1935, and then Fort Worth, Texas was the other one, 1938, I believe. But even in that particular meeting, they were talking about they needed to have a county engineer do some surveying for the site, and they had a couple of individuals that were going to be in Washington later that week after the meeting to meet with folks and talk about the advantages of Lexington as a location for the narcotic farm in general. So again, it was the same stuff then as it is today. You know, you have to meet with folks, you have to build those relationships and continue to follow up on those types of things as well. But again, Mandy can attest to this, that, you know, that if you read a lot of articles about the narcotic farm, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of positive things that came out of it, other than they probably learned a lot of lessons from the treatment programs and the different things that they dealt with there for what's happening today in that particular industry. So,
yeah, in the I think for me, one of the things, and it comes back to something that Bob mentioned, is the narcotic farm is one of those examples where the environment was really important for what they were recruiting, because, and I'm going to geek out a little bit about the narcotic farm. The farm itself was set up as a U.S. public health hospital, but what made it different than some of the other prison hospitals that the federal government had set up is that it was a working farm as well, particularly in that early, the first 20 or 25 years of its history. So you needed a climate that could be farmed, and you needed a big open space that could house a lot of different types of agricultural-based industry. And so Lexington's environment is really good for that. The other piece of that, and what I think about a lot for that facility, as it transitioned after World War II, in that 20-year period from about 1950 to when it closed in 1974, it started supporting some of the other businesses that had been recruited in, because they moved away from the farming aspect of rehabilitation and into work, prison industry work, in the similar ways that prisons work today. But one of their biggest pieces was microfilm. So the inmate, they were called patients. They were never called inmates. The patients would microfilm for businesses and for the university and for all these sorts of things. And as a historian, that is like, just makes me giddy to think about this really interesting facility in our town that is so wrapped up in sort of the image of jazz here, and the stories of the Lexington treatment and those sorts of things are also doing the really foundational work of us knowing who we are, because they're microfilming these really important pieces of paper and the newspaper and all these other things. And it all happens because there's a good relationship with the federal delegation. There's a ready and willing workforce and all of these, and it draws together so much of what makes Lexington what it is. And I'm going to geek out one more minute, and then this podcast isn't about me, but I just love the narcotics farm so much. UK had a really productive partnership with the farm and with the facility, particularly after World War II, in psychiatric nursing. And so they would do a number of their practicums at the narcotic farm. One of those nurses left some materials to the Kentucky Historical Society, which is how I know all of these things. But they would literally teach how to work in a facility like that. A lot of their graduates went on to work at Eastern State and some of the other institutions, medical institutions in and around Central Kentucky. And they would also teach about addicted medical professionals. So how to identify addiction in medical professionals, how to help medical professionals who had become addicted. And they're apparently, supposedly, one of the first places to do that. So Lexington is, again, helping move medicine forward and pioneer some of that in a place that was originally thought of as, here's a farm that we can try and rehabilitate some drug addicts on and see what happens. So again, that the vision of, right, what comes next and how do we make it go?
You know, and sometimes we don't know how that vision will evolve. So we talk about 1935, the narcotic farm, but also 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the federal government contacted, I think it was the Department of Interior, Mayor Jim Newberry, and said, we have some excess land next to what became the Federal Medical Center prison. And that led to Mayor Newberry talking to Stu Silverman, the school superintendent, who gave me a call and said, would Commerce Lexington support if we took some of this land for free and built an agri-science high school, which is what led to Locust Trace Agri-Science Center.
I didn't know. See,
I know.
It's so cool.
Isn't that wild?
That is wild.
And we had something like 20 ag students, FFA members, something in that range. So not very many. I know when I first came here, because I'm very active in FFA growing up. And now today we have, I think it's like over around 350 ag students that have a connection through Locust Trace. And the name Locust Trace, I believe, if I'm correct, I think I am, that was the name of the farm before it became the federal narcotic farm. So anyway, how all these things over time really just evolve.
Yes.
And into things that we had no clue. But just think of all the young people today. We have our first national FFA officer out of Locust Trace, which is a big deal. And, you know, there'll be many more young kids that excel because of what happened back then. And then how we took that resource and made it into something
yes.
even better.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's absolutely incredible. Go ahead, Mark.
So back to your earlier question about what was after Mr. Wilder, that was Ray Gillespie was the executive director after that. So he took over in about 1967, I believe it was. And from that point, when you get into the 70s, obviously you have a lot of really significant things happening, like Rupp Arena Convention Center open. You have merged government, probably one of the most important things in Lexington still.
My joke is that it's the first in Kentucky and still the finest.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, definitely. What else? We had, our community minority business development program started in the mid-90s, which is still going strong today. Just all types of things that we can go on and on about from that section as well.
Yeah, these... So we see this big change. We see, particularly in the post-war era, World War II era, as commercialism and so much of the economy shifts, and Lexington becomes again a center of that. Can you talk a little bit about how the chamber helps us understand that today and how they helped guide sort of the growth of Lexington's business economy in that era, just a little bit?
Going back to post-World War II, I think it, again, just continues to be where you have visionary leaders in the business community. We have big business, small business. We have all a very diversified programs that help large and small business, retail, manufacturers, and everything in between, higher education. I think at some point in time, communities that have really worked hard and taken a vision and turned it into solid infrastructure, solid education systems, when you see that, those kind of communities just continue to evolve unless we take our eye off of the vision of what we can and should be. But I think a lot of it is we started off as the Athens of the Midwest. We had our culture, our commercial side. We did so many of the things right, and we've continued over the decades and over the centuries to continue to develop out who we are. But it takes those unique individuals, you know, that have that vision and then can execute on that. The chamber's always played a huge role. The business community, it knows that we can make the quality of life better. But as Mark and I can attest and tell you, and you live it, is that we got to keep evolving. We talk about technology that we dealt with back then, or issues. You know, horsepower back then was horses. Today it's Toyota and the automotive sector. If you look at the railroad coming through, we still have it, and that's incredible, but we have north, south, east, west interstate system that connects us to 2/3 of the population in the United States on any given day. When you look at technology, and it was the phone system then, me growing up on a farm, we had that dial tone. We thought we were in heaven when we got that put in, and now it's artificial intelligence. It's, you talk to a band on your wrist and it takes commands and it does things for you. So we just have to stay ahead and not fall behind, because when you fall behind, you're out of touch and we lose companies that are here, or we have a hard time recruiting in. And it's just the opposite. People want to be here. Today, the issue is housing, and talent, trying to keep that rich talent that we have. Because people will often, our graduates look and say, that place, the grass is greener. Two of my three kids did. They moved away. But then, you know what, after a couple of years, they said, I can't wait to get back. Lexington's home. I just want to emphasize, we've done so much right. And that puts a lot of pressure, I think, back on the people like Mark and Bob and all the folks back in our offices, working with the mayor and working with elected officials, the council, our state representatives, our federal officials. That's why we touch base on all of those things. We keep a dialogue going. They know us, we know them. And we want to make sure one day when that other interview comes up, the podcast, mm-hmm. and people are talking, that they talk about the things that we did to grow the economy and make it even better. Simple things. A lot of the things we learned is Mr. Wilder, he went out and he recruited in businesses, but the community reached out. They went to Louisville. They did a leadership trip to try to say, hey, how can we work more closely together? Well, for 80 years, we've done leadership trips where we go to a different community. We learn from the things they've done well and the things that if they could do it all over again, they'd do different. Their mistakes, the potholes that maybe they didn't get around. And we're beneficiaries of that. But so much, again, of the past, we're able to build on and go forward with.
Yeah, that's an incredible piece of the, you know, that while it's new, it's not new, as you said earlier.
Well, and our airport right now, there's a massive expansion going on of parking. There's a vision now of moving the control tower and then putting in additional parking, a parking ramp there like what we have now. And bigger planes are coming in. So that's evolved in a positive way. Eric Frankel, I hope he goes down in history as one of the most noted leaders we had because of his vision and the airport board. With these big planes coming in, they need bigger space. So we got things like that going on, that Legacy Park. That's a really an important piece of property that was a trade between the city of Lexington and the University of Kentucky. But did you know that started in a meeting room at Commerce Lexington, where all the sites were brought in? We knew we needed more land for economic development. We were out of land, or we're getting very close to being totally out of land. And these visionary folks came together, figured out a way. It was Jim Gray, as mayor at the time, and Eli Capilouto, president UK. And we figured out how we could make Legacy Park realistic and take it further with Mayor Gordon and the current administration. looking regionally, multiple counties coming together with a business park unheard of, sharing revenues unheard of 10, 15, 20 years ago. And today, people, the vision, they get it. Those city-county lines mean something significant to the public sector. But in the private sector, we don't know lines. But how we then can take all the things that we have collectively, vision, and the tools that we have in front of us, and the ability to go and to get along with other counties and to help each other get better. When you help one of the other 9 counties or 8 counties that are in this regional competitiveness effort that we're doing, when you help all of them, we're helping ourselves. And that vision's there. It wasn't always there. And you would think that, you know, it's kind of hard to understand why. But we're working together in ways that I'm telling you, 10, 15 years ago, people said it was just a dream.
It's incredible. It's so, and that's, you know, such a great way of thinking about Lexington today and thinking regionally and globally that, you know, this isn't new necessarily, but again, we're doing it that way. To go off script just a little bit, but to think about the community work, I do want to take a minute before we end to talk about another program that the Chamber has led for more than 40 years, and that's Leadership Lexington and the work that it does for the city. If you could talk a little bit about Leadership Lexington and maybe where it came from and why it is such an important piece of what we do.
Well, Leadership Lexington is our sort of our cornerstone leadership development program, started in 1979. It was the first class. They probably say it's the best class. I don't know.
They're wrong.
They all say that.
23-24, best class.
it could be. So it obviously it's changed a lot since 1979, but it's generally a 10-month program where the participants meet each month and they talk about a particular topic or segment of the economy in Lexington, and they visit different sites and hear from different leaders across the community and learn all about that. And people just love it. And the impacts on that are just phenomenal from some of these class projects, these class members, which when I was in the program, we did not have the class projects that are implemented today. So it's everything from public art to financial literacy to hunger relief, you name it, every possible topic under the sun. Some of these groups are still going today. The Diversity Festival is still going. There's countless ones that are still operating, and the students either pass it on to another organization or they're still involved in it today. So the impact now, I don't think people realize the ripple effect of that program on our community and the leaders that it's cultivated over the years. And there's been, you know, mayors and congressmen and folks that have gone through that program years ago, and, you know, top CEOs that are even now retired. And so it's awesome to see their impact.
Yeah, I really can't recommend it enough in the ways that it helps do exactly what you've been talking about. It is to open doors and to have visionary experiences and to hear from some of those visionaries on how Lexington has evolved.
And everybody that goes through it, they're like, well, I had no idea that this was going on in Lexington, or I just didn't know the depth of what was happening and whatever the topic is and stuff. So it's a real eye-opening experience.
Yes. And lessons learned from that and the outcomes of getting more people plugged into the community, which this program has done, so that that's, again, that where people bring a lot of different visions and a lot of muscle and a lot of smarts, and they figure out and grow together. But also, we started a young professionals program because right now we're going through a rapid transformation of community leaders, and the way business is conducted is very different, where it used to be maybe 5-7 individuals who were heads of business and industry making all the decisions. And today it's a lot more of all folks coming together to figure out how can we make Lexington better. If I could, there's a couple other things I just want to throw into this. You know, we oftentimes take for granted the horse industry, and that's something we never can take for granted because it's one of those things that made us who we are, and quite frankly, we're known globally. And as we travel globally, people can identify with the horse and then likewise with Lexington. But, you know, being the horse capital of the world, the reason that we became that obviously was because of the horse farms, but then we always have to talk about Keeneland and what Keeneland meant, not just in the racing side, but also in the sales that they have that go on. And we have people from all over the world here. They may own the farms, but they also are there buying the top stock of horses worldwide, and it's all right here. The Kentucky Horse Park that brought the world here in 2010, mm-hmm. with the World Equestrian Games, and 57 nations, I believe it was 57 nations were here, and they came and saw us. And then when the economy turned and there were some horse farms for sale, the sport horse started to move in. So that kind of diversified who we are. But again, we just can't underestimate them. And then also, one of the things we talk about, people having vision, in 2016, Commerce Lexington was named the number one chamber of commerce in the large chamber category. I mean, we're competing with against all the big cities. We beat Brooklyn, New York. We beat out Tampa, Florida, and another community out west in Washington State. And that was because of all the things. And forever, I will always say, the individual who made that happen for us, who wrote our story, was a guy named Mark Turner, who's on your board. Yeah. But I think he absolutely helped make history for us. The convention center expansion, that's a big deal because now we can go after the majority of the conventions in the United States and we can host them here. And with the Gatton Park behind that new convention center, again, amazing, the vision that Ann Bacus and others had of what that could mean for us. So there's just so many other things, the Minority Business Accelerator. We want all people, and all people can contribute and be part of all these different things that we do, but we made it very pointed effort to make sure we bring all folks together. Urban service boundary expanded for the first time in 27 years. Again, it'll allow us growth, but we always have to have that balance and that careful eye on that. And because I talked about the Legacy Park, I just thought it was important we talk about some of these other features of, again, who we are and what we have been, but what we can become.
Absolutely.
And Bob, if somebody wants to join Commerce Lexington, how do they do that?
Well, what we always do, we try to just have a salesperson meet with them. We have two folks that just full-time and a third person who actually kind of helps us with that higher corporate level of funding. But actually all of us at the office, we sell, but we reach out and we always like to have a person sit down with them, explain what it is. Well, first of all, we need to ask them what they need and then talk with them about how we can help them with their specific needs. And that's where you connect and make the greatest value statement for folks. And those are individuals who will stay on longer than just being in and out of the chamber.
They can call our office, 859-254-4447, or go to commercelexington.com and they can join directly on the website as well. And since this is business month for Lex 250, we really want to mention that the Salute to Small Business Awards are coming up for Commerce Lexington, and we've been doing this since 1986. So during the week of August 11th through the 15th, we'll have a whole lot of events and things leading up to the awards luncheon on Friday, August 15th. So everybody, I hope they'll come out and support our award-winning small businesses, which we'll be announcing soon. We'll have a Facebook Live segments that week. We'll have an educational panel on Tuesday, August 12th. We'll have a small business night at the ballpark at Legends Field on Wednesday, August 13th. So come on out and celebrate small business in general, but also these great businesses that are being awarded things this year. So.
And as far as small businesses are concerned, there's different criteria, correct, in these salutes?
Oh, yes. We've got different categories in there. Entrepreneurial, you've got business success. We also have a nonprofit category as well. So, you know, they're not eligible for the Small Business Award, but we wanted to highlight one of our top nonprofits and get them recognized at a higher level. So it'll be fun.
All right. The last question. When do you guys sleep? That's what I want to know. I mean, not with often. All of that going on, when do you guys sleep?
Not often. Yeah.
We're always on a high.
It's hard not to be when you're in Lexington.
We're still trying to explain to our children what we, actually our young adults, what we do, because they keep saying, okay, everybody asks me at school, you know, what is it your dad or your mom, you know, do? And so, but we do a lot of different things. To me, it's one of the richest opportunities of a lifetime, and especially to be in a Lexington, Kentucky, one of the most revered and respected communities, not because of what we say, but of all those different things we talked about. And again, we can never forget our past. What we're building our future on is what happened. You know, IBM became Lexmark, which is now Xerox, and the world keeps turning, and we keep churning out some incredible things worldwide.
And in my free time, I go to the Lexington History Museum, so which I will be at tonight.
Oh, there you go. Going Perfect. Full circle. We love it, yeah. Mark.
Thank you all so much. I'm sure we could do this for hours. But I'm so glad you were here and to share with us this month.
Yes. And speaking of this month, what is going on at the museum?
So obviously Intersections is there and you can come see us. We are also the second host of Queer Here and Everywhere, the 250 Lex supported Faulkner Morgan Archive traveling exhibit about LGBTQ plus history in Lexington and Kentucky and throughout the state. So that'll be on display from through about mid-September. And on August 27th at 6:30 p.m., Josh Porter, who you all have heard from on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. He's been on twice.
Twice.
Yeah.
We'll be giving a gallery talk about the development of that exhibit and some of the information within it. So look for event details soon on our website. And then, of course, it's back to school. So as your students get back into the classroom and they start asking questions, bring them down so we can help them put Lexington's history into the context of what they're learning in their classrooms.
Yes, and you always open the door and swing it very, very wide for school groups.
Always. We, you know, my Alan knows this, but I don't know if listeners do. I spent a lot of time in the classroom before I came to the museum world, and one of the great joys is watching students' eyes light up when they can make a connection, particularly a local connection, to something they've learned elsewhere or something they know about the wider world. So we would love to have students there.
And the 250 exhibit will do just that. We certainly hope.
Yes, we absolutely hope so. And the other part of that 250 exhibit, related to what Bob was talking about with vision, is that we want people to see that it was individuals working with other folks that they knew to make this vision for whatever they had possible. If it was Transylvania Medical School in the 19th century or the building of Rupp Arena or whatever it is, it took individuals talking to each other and working together to make that possible. And that is the intersection that we hope so many people will grasp onto.
Well, with that in mind, anything to sort of drop for September?
Well, September is sports month. So just listeners, get excited because I have so much to say about sports in this town.
You're going to wave that big blue pennant.
I can't wait.
All through the studio.
Yes.
I know that's going to be happening. So, all right. Well, that is all the time that we have this month for Lex Talk History, and we will see you next month.
You've been listening to Lex Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts or download Lex Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at LexHistory.org.